Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 720. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about glacial lakes and hanging glaciers, hikes and marble caves, guanaco and puma, as we drive the Carretera Austral in southern Chile. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about southern Chile. I'd like to welcome back to the show Steph Dyson, who is a travel journalist, a guidebook author, most recently The Moon Guide to Chile, and a travel blogger at worldlyadventurer.com. Steph, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Chris. I'm excited to be back again.
Well, there's some truth in that. I should say, when I say welcome back to the show, Steph has been on the show before, and you have heard her talking about northern Chile a number of episodes ago. I want to say 5 years ago.
Yeah, I think that's correct.
Just before you started working on a guidebook?
Just before, yes.
So this is kind of rounding out that experience because the Moon Guide to Chile just published. And that was quite a long amount of time working on this guidebook. But also, Steph was on the show a week ago, and something went terribly wrong, and it did not record. So I appreciate your patience, but I also appreciate your expertise on Chile. When we talk about Chile, this time we're talking about, and I'm going to try and pronounce it, the Carretera Austral, the Southern
Perfect.
Highway.
That was good pronunciation. I see you've been working on it.
Well, I have to do some things right this time. What is the Carretera Austral, and where would we find that in Chile?
So the Carretera Austral actually means the Southern Highway, which mm-hmm. should give you a bit of a clue. And it's in Chilean Patagonia. Now, Patagonia is this sort of slightly nebulous region because nobody's really sure if it's somewhere on its own or if it belongs to other countries or what it is. But effectively, it's a region in the very far south of South America owned between Argentina and Chile. Mm-hmm. And the Carretera Austral is the kind of northwestern section. So it's the kind of Chilean bit where the Chile gets really, really narrow, sort of that part of the country. And it's just before you hit very southern Patagonia, where's Torres del Paine and other destinations that you've discussed previously on the podcast.
Right. We are further north than the last show we did on Patagonia. There is a lot of Patagonia. If we look at the map, there's a lot of Chile in terms of a height, not necessarily in terms of width.
Yeah, it's a long country, and I have driven most of it, and it takes a while.
Well, and just this road is 770 miles or 1,240 kilometers. So when we talk about our usual one-week itinerary, you're going to start us not at the top and go all the way to the bottom. Where are you going to start us?
Yeah, so I always recommend to people planning Patagonia is starting in Balmaceda. So it's about halfway down the Carretera Austral. It's just outside the sort of biggest town in the area that's Coyhaique. And it's got an airport there where you can fly into directly from Santiago. So it makes it a really great destination to start your trip.
Okay. And are we going to do anything around the airport after we fly in, or where are we going to start our actual trip?
No, so I would recommend picking up a car there. Mm-hmm. You don't need a four-wheel drive for the Cadeter Australia. You just need sort of reasonably high clearance because most of it is now paved. Yeah, which is a big deal for the locals, I'll tell you that, because mm-hmm. it hasn't been paved before. But yes, yeah, so you're going to jump in your car and you're going to head south for a couple of hours to Villa Cerro Castillo, which is a really tiny little town outside of a national park.
Okay. You talk about outside a national park. The one thing... As we talk about this, pretty much this whole way, there are national parks everywhere. I think I had made the analogy that if you started at the top of this highway and you were a squirrel, you could probably get to the southern tip of South America and jump from tree to tree within a national park. I'm not sure the tree is correct, but the national parks is almost accurate. This just a whole lot of national parks here in southern Chile.
Yeah, and it's actually what the government did last year was started up the Ruta de los Parques, the route of the parks. And it's about 2,400 kilometers, I believe, connecting pretty much Puerto Montt, which is the very northern tip of Patagonia, uh-huh. all the way down to Cape Horn, which has its own national park. It's the bit at the very bottom of South America's island that people go around. Because the sailors used to round the horn and it was a big deal because it's mm-hmm. quite windy down there.
It is. It's quite windy yeah. down there.
But yeah, so it's now this sort of route of the parks. It's kind of disingenuous because you can't actually drive between all of them. But the Carretera Austral does right. give you an opportunity to actually connect quite a number of them.
Excellent. So you took us outside a national park, but you didn't say which one yet.
So it's named after the town. So it's Cerro Castillo National Park. And it's named after this peak inside the national park, which is also is called Cerro Castillo, which translates as Castle Hill. And it effectively, it looks quite a lot like a castle. It's got these really kind of rugged peaks on it. Mm-hmm. And it overlooks this beautiful Cyan Lake. And it's often compared to Torres del Paine in the south of the country in terms of what it looks like. But the best bit about this national park, unlike Torres del Paine, is that you don't see that many other visitors there. So the hiking in itself is just feels a lot more remote and wild and beautiful as a result.
Well, and I had not heard of this national park, but when I saw a picture of the Castle Rock, the jagged rocks there, it's one of those things where you have to look at it and go, why not? Why hasn't this gotten as much? But so much of this is... new road, new cities and such, some of them even in my lifetime.
Yeah, and it's, I don't really understand why people haven't heard so much about it. Mm-hmm. It's definitely got a lot more interest in it in the past few years, mostly mm-hmm. because of what's been happening around there. And I'll talk a bit more about that when we get further south. Yeah, it's really bizarre. And I genuinely, it's such a beautiful place. And you can do, if you don't fancy doing lots of trekking, there is a shorter day hike that you can go and visit this lake and see the mountain. Or if you've got a bit longer, you could do a 4 or 5 day hike that takes you sort of across the national park. And just the scenery is magnificent, really dense forests, loads and loads of glaciers, which is going to become a theme of this podcast because there are a lot of glaciers in this part of Patagonia. And you might see Andean foxes, you might even see skunks, there might be some pumas. It's really a remarkable national park.
And you say to this lake, that's the lake at the base of the mountain?
Yes.
Okay. Glacial Lake.
Yeah, it's a glacial lake and it's really, really beautiful. And to be honest, when I was there, I didn't actually get to see Cerro Castillo, the peak, because it was snowing, as it does. But the lake in itself is truly incredible.
Well, and I'm not sure that everybody is familiar. When I say glacial lake, I think you would get a picture in your mind, and I think a lot of people would, but not everyone would. The color of a glacial lake, it's not that clear. It's filled with silt and tends to be in the greens or amazing blues.
Yeah, they are quite something. And yeah, if you've never seen one before, it is really startling. And it actually comes from I think it's called glacial salt or glacial... Glacial flour, that's the one. And yeah, so it's all the kind of, yeah, like you said, the silt that's come off the glacier then is in the water bobbing around and creating this really beautiful color.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Anything else we're going to do in Cerro Castillo?
No, we are going to continue south for another couple of hours, stopping for lots of photos because there are, even just off the road, there's some really beautiful places that you'll just want to stop and take photos of. But we're going to head towards Puerto Rio Tranquilo, which is a tiny little port on Lago General Carrera, which is General Carrera Lake. And we're going to stay there and visit some marble caves.
Excellent. And you say we're going to stop and take photos. My impression is that this is not a road one drives to get there. It's not going to be the fastest road I've ever driven.
No, it's not going to be the fastest, but that's kind of part of the fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is all compacted gravel and everything, the bits that aren't paved. But there's the kind of old saying that it's the journey, not the destination. Mm-hmm. And I think this is really very true about this part of the world. And you could spend days just stopping every 2 minutes to take a photo of a mountain from a slightly different angle or the lake in slightly different light. It's just, if you like photography, this is an exceptional place to go.
Excellent. And then you took us down to Rio Tranquilo, or Tranquil River. That sounds pretty good. And the General Carrera Lake.
Yes. So this is probably the most famous part of the Carretera Austral, because it is home to the marble caves, which are effectively these big rocky outcrops, some of which are sort of floating in the, well, not floating in the lake, but appear to hover over the lake. And they're all sort of different rainbow veined marble down through the rock. And it's also because the lake is just so beautiful. Again, this is a glacial lake. Again, it is sort of electric blue in color in certain lights, and the whole effect is just so colorful and really stunning. And you can head out on a speedboat tour, which will take you up to the caves. And if you go kayaking instead, which you can also do, you can actually paddle through the caves. And yeah, it's just, I don't know what it is about it, but it's just so picturesque and yeah, just really beautiful.
Well, and this is the first of what are going to be a series of places named after generals, all heroes from the Chilean War of Independence, General Carrera. We might as well get that out of the way now, that if you hear the name of a person, I think there's one exception, but everybody else is going to be a general from the War of Chilean Independence.
Yeah, they appear to like naming things after war heroes, which, I mean, I feel most countries do.
Sure.
But it's quite prolific here in the Carretera Austral.
We've got a few things named after Washington, so I don't think we can throw any rocks at that. So,
No, we probably can't do that either. But yeah, another reason to spend some time in Puerto Rio Tranquilo is because you have access to another glacier, mm-hmm. which is Exploradores, or Explorers. And it's a sort of short drive from the town, but you can actually do some ice trekking if you head out over there, which is great. Even if you don't have any experience, you can just sort of head out with a guide and they'll show you how to use a pickaxe and use the crampons and everything like that. And just the views again, because you're sort of up this glacier, you can see across the whole landscape. And again, it's just a really remarkable activity. And it's quite cheap actually there as well. So it's, lots of people do it in Argentina, but I'd recommend it here instead.
Now, when you say that I can do, or that one can do the glacier, what level of fitness does one need? We're not ice climbing, we're walking on the glacier?
Yeah, we're effectively walking on the glacier. So you need some base level of fitness, but mm-hmm. You're not going to be sort of abseiling down like crevasses or anything like that.
Okay.
It's a good activity. And if you don't feel like actually doing any trekking, then you can actually just go to a viewpoint from the car park, which is a shorter walk, and still get to see some of the magnificent views.
Excellent. Well, I don't think a lot of us have had a chance to get out on a glacier, and it is an interesting experience. I think I've been on a glacier only a couple times myself.
Yeah, and I think you don't realize until you get so close to them sort of just how remarkable they really are and how mm-hmm. vast, and I don't know, because they are moving. They're all sort of moving at slow speed.
Not that you feel motion.
No.
Right.
No, exactly. I don't know. It's almost like a living creature to a certain degree, because you can hear it, the sort of water coming through it and the ice sort of cracking. And that could be a bit disconcerting, but it's also, I don't know, it just feels really alive.
Excellent. Where to next?
So we're going to continue heading south, and we are going to visit another park, which is called Patagonia National Park. And this park is actually really interesting because it is one of those that was created by the late Doug Tompkins and his wife, Chris Tompkins. Mm-hmm. So they donated around 500,000 hectares of land, private land that they'd bought up and converted into protected areas. They donated it to the Chilean government a couple of years ago. It was actually the largest transfer of private land to government in history. And as a result, they've made this national park, which I think has to be one of my favorite national parks in Patagonia.
Well, and I feel like I say, oh, sure, Doug Tompkins, like I knew this longer ago than 1 week when you and I talked. So I'm not going to assume that everybody, although it's a smart audience, so they probably know who you're talking about. But who is Doug Tompkins? Douglas Tompkins.
So he was the founder of the North Face, mm-hmm. and he was known during his lifetime for his philanthropic work. The problem is that when him and Chris came to Patagonia, everybody saw them as kind of Americans coming to buy land and use it for their own uses and make money out of it. And nobody really trusted what they were trying to achieve until they donated the land. And they've done remarkable things for the region. Not all the locals agree with that, but I think there's a vast majority of people who see the benefits of what they've done.
ButcherBox is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first ButcherBox. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping as always, curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. I also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. Sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way as I send my thanks to ButcherBox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Excellent. And what are we going to do at Patagonia National Park?
So the national park is split into 3 sections. So we're going to be in the Valle Chacabuco, or the Chacabuco Valley section, which was an old sheep and cattle ranch that has basically been what they refer to as rewilded, which means that they've allowed the ecosystems to recover from the time when they're being farmed. Mm-hmm. And what makes it so interesting is because it's right on the Argentinian border. And most of Argentinian Patagonia is actually steppe. So it's kind of grassland, sort of savanna ecosystems. Mm-hmm. Whereas this, on the western side, we've got a lot more rain. So there's a lot more sort of beech forests and it's a lot more mountainous. And in this national park, you actually get to see both sides of that. And as a result, you also get to see some really interesting animals, such as guanaco, which are the distant relative of the llama. Mm-hmm. As well as rhea, which are a bit like an emu, that you might see sort of running around on the plains. And you might also get a chance to see a puma, which is an incredible experience if you get it.
Excellent. And I hadn't thought about that until you were saying that a lot of Argentina would be in the rain shadow of the Andes, so the rain shadow of Chile.
Yeah, which explains why the Chilean side, I think, is more interesting, because actually you have a greater diversity of kind of ecosystems. You've got all these trees that your squirrel can run up and down on. But yeah, it's a lot wetter. And as a result, that does mean you get a lot more rain.
Sure.
But it also does feed the landscape and make it really very beautiful.
Excellent. Anything else we want to do at Patagonia National Park?
Yeah, so there's lots of day hikes. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a favorite?
Yeah, so the Lagunas Altas, or the High Lakes, is really stunning. I mean, you go through a series of different lakes that are all very beautiful in color, and you also get sweeping views of the entire valley, which gives you a sense of the landscape and the setting a bit better. And you can also do some scenic drives through the national park. You can actually head over into Argentina for the day and come back in again. And you're really getting into some very remote territory, because it is a national park, so no one lives here. And yeah, you can just really enjoy the sort of wildness of the whole area.
All right. Where to next?
So after this, we're going to head a little bit further south down to Cochrane, which is named after another of our war heroes. I think we decided he was Scottish, didn't we? It's Lord Cochrane.
I think so. I'd have to look it up again.
Yes. So anyway, yes, he was a Scottish war hero who helped out the Chileans. All of the towns along the Carretera Austral are very small, but this one actually has a Hollywood-style Cochrane sign in the hills. So you see it sort of in different, the Cochrane in big letters, which is quite entertaining because it really is a very small place. But the reason to stop in Cochrane is it has access to the southern part of Patagonia National Park, which is called Sector Tamango. And you also, from here, you can sort of do, again, some day hikes. You can see Lago Cochrane, the Cochrane Lake, which is very, very beautiful, and it's connected to the Cochrane River, which is one of the clearest, the scientists have proven it's one of the clearest in the world. All the lakes around here are really remarkably clear because of the coming from glaciers and everything like that. But this is also a really good place to see huemul, the type of deer you can find in Patagonia.
Okay. And Cochrane was an Englishman, the 10th Earl of Dundonald.
Oh, there you go. That's
But it was also a Scottish naval officer, so that's where we, he's both.
Yeah, that's what confused me. Yeah, the Scots aren't claiming, though, if he's English, he's definitely not Scottish. That says more about British politics than anything else. But anyway, so we're going to head further south again to Caleta Tortel, which is a very pretty little settlement that is very unique in the fact that whilst you can drive into it and there's a car park, the rest of the village is only accessible by cypress wooden walkways. So there's about 10 kilometres of these walkways, many of which look, because you're on the side of a fjord, and many of them look like they're floating above the waters. And you can walk miles and miles and miles on these things trying to see the village. And it really is like a fairy tale. You really don't expect to see this here.
Well, and I think we said that it's a former logging town, logging cypress wood, which is why everything is built out of cypress.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why it started up. And one of the really interesting kind of legends from the town, and one of the things you can do there, is you can hire one of the local people in their boat to take you out to the Isla de los Muertos, which is the island of the dead. And on here, you find there are 33 cypress crosses on this really small island. And the legend has it that these were the men who first came here to work for the forestry company. And rather than pay them, the company bumped them off. Now, nobody knows if this is true or not. And the island itself is fairly spooky and quite atmospheric. And it's a bit of a weird thing for the town to be known for. But anyway, it's a day activity you can do.
Well, and not to be confused with Isla de la Muerte, which is the island with the dinosaurs on it in Jurassic Park. So, or one of the islands.
And I don't think there are dinosaurs on this island. So people are safe. It's all good.
Well, that has yet to be seen. Depends on where the logging company is still around. So,
From Caleta Tortal, an interesting thing here as well is that you can actually connect down with Puerto Natales, which is one of the main towns in southern Patagonia. And it's the gateway town to Torres del Paine National Park. And it's a great couple of day ferry journey, very local because it's the form of transport that a lot of the local people use. But it's a really great experience because I really think that anybody who comes to Patagonia should take a ferry at some point. And you can spend a lot of money on big companies who provide really excellent experiences. But if you've got a slightly smaller budget, then doing a local ferry is a great alternative.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about doing the ferries. We didn't really talk about what you're going to see if you're getting out on a boat in this region.
Yeah, so the interesting thing with the Chilean side of Patagonia is that there's a lot of fjords here and that most of them are forested as well. So there's a lot of vegetation on them, even if it is a bit kind of wind destroyed because the winds, like I said, are very strong here. Mm-hmm. You pretty much are going through some very narrow channels. You've got quite strong opportunities to see whales, orca or killer whale. They're not very common here, but you have a chance. Mm-hmm. Blue whale are possible as well. I've heard of people seeing them, but you're most likely to see just a lot of dolphins as well as penguins that kind of bob up and down in the water. And you might see albatrosses as well. We saw one following the back of our ferry, which was pretty cool. So yeah, it's just a very remote, wild experience.
Well, and I've had a chance to do these Chilean fjords on a larger ship. In fact, we have an old episode about sailing around the Horn, basically from Argentina to Chile. And I remember one day we were going through a region where there were six different glaciers within the course of the morning, and at least one shipwreck that we're sailing past, and you're watching glaciers calve from the boat as well. So just a beautiful area, and there's no really roads here. If you're going to see this, you're going to see it by boat or air, I suppose.
Yeah, and also what is fantastic is that you won't see very many boats either. Mm-hmm. I've done a similar journey and I think we saw one other boat. And these aren't big cruise, like huge cruise liners at all. They're all expedition boats anyway. So the whole experience is pretty, you know that there's not been that many other people who've done this sort of in the past few years or perhaps ever. So it's really interesting place to explore.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I was on a cruise ship, so make sure that we're clear there. I was on a 2,000-person cruise ship, so that one was an actual bigger boat. Not bigger by today's standards, but...
yeah.
Excellent. Where else?
So from here, we're going to reach the very end of the Carretera Austral, the southern tip, and we're going to head over to Vio'Higgins, which is the last settlement on the road, and it was only connected by road in 1999. Prior to this point, they got in by boat or by a light aircraft, and it's still only resident to 625 people, so it is tiny.
And oddly enough, named after a hero from the Chilean War of Independence, Bernardo O'Higgins, who was from the region but also half Spanish and Irish in ancestry, and the leader at the time that they declare independence and the first dictator of Chile.
Yeah, he has quite a colored history, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing really else to do with him in this town. Somebody clearly decided they wanted to name it after him. But yeah, one of the reasons to come this far, and most people don't, which is why I always recommend it, is because you can actually sail out to the O'Higgins Glacier, which is also on Lower O'Higgins, and you boat up to it and you get a glass of whiskey with some shaved glacial ice in it. And it's just another remarkable experience of getting very close to this glacier and just appreciating, again, the enormity of it. Again, just a wonderful experience.
Well, when you say very close, I want to give people a correct impression. You're not going to be reaching out and touching a glacier because that would be very dangerous. These things are really big.
Yeah, that's true. But you'll get to see it calving. And oh, yeah. So sort of crashing
if you're lucky.
Down. If you're lucky, yeah. They don't do it on schedule,
on command.
Yeah. But if you wanted to get even closer, and this is something I would highly recommend because it was one of the highlights of my trip, is you can take... There's a guy who owns a light aircraft and he will take you up and over the glacier and get you sort of within a few, I think it was within about 20 meters of the glacier, and you can peer down into the crevasses and you just can't believe how big it is until you're hovering just above it in a plane. And yeah.
And I haven't done that in the Southern Ice Fields, but I've done it in the Yukon, and it is a stunning experience. I'm with you. Small plane ride in glacial area is just amazing, especially if you're a photographer.
Oh, yeah, definitely. The only problem is we were issued with sick bags at the start of the flight, and he did tell us to not be embarrassed if we needed to use them, and somebody did need them on the on our flight, which was unfortunate because the rest of us were just about holding our lunch down. But yeah, it was really beautiful, and you can also, from this glacier as part of the Southern Patagonian Ice Field, which is one of the largest non-polar ice fields on the planet, and it's also right next to Argentina, so you can see Mont Fitzroy, which is the mountain that they use in the Patagonia logo. So it's a really famous mountain. So yeah, it's just seeing everything from a very different perspective and just being out there on your own, and just, it was just a really magical experience for me. It's certainly not something I'm gonna forget for a very long time.
Excellent. Well, and as we get away from O'Higgins, I think this is the last of the places named after heroes from the Chilean War of Independence. If you want to hear more about that, I would recommend the Revolutions podcast, the series they did on South American revolutions, which was very interesting. But we're not going to go into more detail on that on Amateur Traveler. And now we've reached all the way to the end. So we just get on a plane and go home.
Not quite. We have to go back on ourselves.
Okay.
And what I often suggest to people, because we're effectively doing a loop sort of down south, is I do recommend that people kind of give themselves a couple of days to get down, a couple of days to go up, and you can visit any of the places we've talked about sort of on the way up or down. It doesn't really make any difference. On the way back up, a place I would suggest stopping in is Chile Chico, which means Little Chile. And it's right on the Lago General Carrera Lake. It's on the very eastern side, it's right on the border with Argentina, and it's got this really bizarre microclimate, which means they're capable of growing cherries, which you just wouldn't expect from how damp it is in this part of the world, but they get an incredible number of hot sunny days in Lago General Carrera. And you can take the boat across. There's a lovely little ferry that's only a couple of hours, but you can take it across the lake, and again you've got the mountains there. It leaves at dawn as well, depending on which ferry you take, and it's just seeing Patagonia in the dawn light is another experience I think everybody has to have at some point.
Now, this is one of the few places where we've got a road actually into Argentina if we wanted to add Argentina to our trip. Is there anything we should know if we're going to do that?
Yeah, I guess you can head into Argentina, and there's the Cave of Hands right across, well, not right across the border, but a short drive across the border. And it's really quite incredible, actually. It's got these handprints that people have painted. So they painted their hands and then pressed them up against the walls, and it's spectacular.
And so we're talking about things that are 9,000 to 13,000 years ago. Wow.
Yeah. There's so many of them as well, and the guide takes you around and points out all the six-fingered handprints as well, because they're only one hand. I can't remember if they're left or right, but there was clearly a certain hand they used, and they think that maybe the six fingers, that was seen as a lucky thing as well, so they let people do that as well. But yeah, they're very close to Chile Chico. The problem of crossing Argentina here, but it is really your only possibility this far south, is that there's really nothing else in Argentina very close. So it's a good 12-hour drive to get to Southern Patagonia from here. So if you do it, then just be prepared that it's a pretty long journey. There are places to stop, the sort of small towns, but it's not like you can just pop in and see some of the other sites very easily.
Okay, excellent. And then you took us across on the ferry.
Yeah, so we head across to the northern shore, and from here we can either head back to Balmaceda and drop off the car, or you can head further north to the town of Puyuapi. It was founded by Germans in the 1930s. The interesting thing about Chile is it has had so much immigration from Europe, because they basically had all this space and nobody to do anything with it. So they actively encouraged that the Germans came over and settled parts of the country. And it still feels quite German. A lot of the architecture is wooden houses. It does feel a bit like you're in Germany, which is a little bit bizarre.
Well, and you and I were talking about it earlier, that when I was in Portimont, which is at the northern end of this road, we were there again on that cruise ship that I mentioned, and our tour guide was a native German speaker. not because she had just come over from Germany. Her family had moved to Germany the same time my German half of the family had moved to the U.S., roughly 1850s. But they had retained the German language. And so there are German schools in that region, and there are people who speak German at home and then speak Spanish, obviously, as they're conducting business. But what really happened is Germans came over and the German Catholics largely assimilated because they went to church with the Chileans and it was in Spanish. And so they adapted, while the German Protestants largely stayed independent.
Yeah, it's just, it is really remarkable. And they really maintained their culture. Like you said, like there were people who came from all over the world and moved to Chile. And mm-hmm. the Germans are the ones who, like you said, they still speak German. You can buy Kuchen in yeah. Puerto Varas and just everything. There's such a beer drinking culture as well in Chile. I think a lot of that stems from the mm-hmm. kind of German influence as well.
Which is good news for beer drinkers, but...
Indeed. And there's actually some great breweries along the Catedral Austral. So it's a good place to go because the water is so clear.
Ah, okay.
And yeah.
Is there one you would recommend?
A brewery that I would really recommend is called Casa Tropera.
Okay.
And it's actually in Coyhaique that we're not going to mention on this trip. They have a great little brewery in Coyhaique. You can actually drink their beer in Puerto Varas, further north as well. But you can generally find some of these beers in shops across the region anyway. So I would recommend it.
Excellent. You were taking us a little further north.
Yeah, so in Puyuapi, what I recommend people do is, again, it's a glacier, but I promise it's worth it because we have seen a few already. But this is where you can have access to the Quelulat National Park, which is home to the Quelulat Hanging Glacier.
Mm-hmm. And what, Steph, is a hanging glacier?
So a hanging glacier is a glacier that is hanging off a cliff. And this one in particular is kind of, it looks a bit like a wedge of cheese, which doesn't make it sound as beautiful as it is, but it's kind of this triangular lump of ice that's attached to the cliff, and there's this big gushing fountain of water that comes down off the side of it into a lake beneath it. And if you're lucky, you will see and very much hear the glacier calving. It feels like it's in a sort of amphitheater because of the mountains around it, and you will hear the sound of it because it's just like a thundering roar of ice crashing down into the water below. And I saw it when I was there. Like, you, again, you have to be lucky because these mm-hmm. guys aren't on a certain schedule. But you can spend the afternoon there anyway. It's a very short, sort of a couple of kilometer hike up from the entrance to the national park. And you can go and sit on this viewpoint and just feast your eyes on that glacier.
Well, we're talking about all the glaciers we're going to see. That begs the question of what time of year should we go?
Well, the Catedral Austral has a reasonably short window of kind of when you can visit.
Okay.
I recommend between October and April, because the issue is that in other parts of the year, there's quite a lot of snow, mm-hmm. there's a lot of rain, the driving conditions get quite difficult, and most of the tourist infrastructure closes down anyway.
Okay.
Also, nobody has central heating, so it gets very cold.
So spring, summer into fall.
Yeah, and January and February is when you will find the most people in this part of Patagonia. And in general, in Chile, I would personally, if you can, I would recommend avoiding January and February.
Okay.
But November and March are kind of both that sort of sweet spot between not too many people, but there's still things open. And particularly if you're there in March, you get all of the fall colors. So everything starts turning red and orange. Again, it's a photographer's dream if you go at that time of the year.
Excellent. Well, and if you're coming from the Northern Hemisphere, you may need some color, especially if you live in one of those colder, wetter places.
Yeah, I can't guarantee it won't still be wet.
Yeah.
But you will get some color, and you will get some sunny days through it.
Excellent. What else do you want to cover in the north here?
So at this point, I would generally recommend people drive back to Balmaceda if mm-hmm. they've come down on the plane. The alternative thing that you can do is, rather than fly to Balmaceda, you can fly to Puerto Montt, which is the very northern tip of the Catedral Austral,
mm-hmm.
and you can get very, very affordable car rental there. It's one of the cheapest places in the country to rent a car. And from there, you can head south down on the Carretera Austral. The only problem being that the Carretera Austral actually sort of runs out a bit, and you end up having to take some car ferries to get you to the nearest town, which is Chaitén.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Chaitén is again very close to a national park, which is Parque Nacional Pumalin. And this is again another one of the Tompkins Foundation who've set up this national park. But what makes it so different from the south is that, A, we're in a section of temperate rainforest. Huh. So it's very, very dense. It's home to the pudú, which is another type of deer. But this is the smallest deer on earth.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it's... I've almost run one over once. It's very endangered, and I didn't know what would happen to me if I admitted to running a pudú over, because I think I'd get in a lot of trouble. But they do seem to have a tendency of kind of running across the road in front of you. So keep your eyes peeled for a sort of very squat, sort of stubby deer running in front of your vehicle.
Well, now I know I've seen things in the deer family that are only like a foot tall or so in Africa. So we're talking, when you say the smallest, we're talking pretty small.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I've seen one up pretty close, and they're, I want to say they're the size of maybe a reasonably small dog. They're not big.
Okay.
They're not beautiful, but they are a very intriguing creature. But yeah, so you'll see a lot of, you might have a luck of seeing them, but everything is so green and very damp. And there's a lot of trees, the Alursi tree, which is millennia old. It's really, really tall and very big, and you can see a lot of them in the national park. But for me, the star attraction is the Chaitén volcano, which people didn't actually know was a volcano until it exploded in 2008.
That seems like a rude way to learn that something is a volcano.
Yeah, it seemed a little bit unfair, because the Chileans are generally pretty on it in terms of volcano kind of monitoring, because they've got a lot of them.
Yeah.
This thing exploded, and it basically, all the ash that came down mixed with the river, creating all these lahars that then flowed into the town.
And lahar is like a flash flood of mud.
Yeah. And they're very dangerous, because obviously the power behind them just wipes everything out. But yeah, I think because they have such good contingency planning in terms of natural disasters in Chile, because they have a lot of volcanoes that like to explode, and they get quite a few earthquakes. So they got everybody out, but the lahars basically wiped out half of Chaitén, which you can still see all these very wonky houses that are sort of at an angle that have been preserved on one side of town, so you can see the impact of the volcano. But yeah, now you can actually go and climb up to the crater, which is 3.5 kilometers wide. And it's still got the actual peak of the volcano that is still puffing out smoke. But I don't think anyone thinks it's going to erupt again anytime soon.
Well, sure, but that's what they said before.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Well, and I was aware that there was one in Portimont, just outside, that you can see when you're there, that erupted also relatively recently. So this is something that they, as you say, they're very aware of. And this would be a pyroclastic blast. I mean, basically where the top of the mountain, the reason it's a 3-mile across crater is that part of the mountain is not there anymore. Didn't come down as lava, but just basically exploded.
Yeah, and I think it exploded mostly over Argentina, which apparently always happens. They get a little bit cross because they don't really have any volcanoes, but all the volcanoes, because of the prevailing winds, all of the ash and everything just lands in Argentina and stops their planes from flying for a couple of days.
And gives them very fertile soil.
That's the one bonus of this, I believe, yeah. So yeah, so you can climb up into this crater. It's about a 600-meter sort of increase, so it's very steep, but you'll pass like lumps of obsidian and pumice stone that came out in the eruption. And also from the top of the crater, you can peer into the crater, which has got some lakes in it, which are pretty cool. But you can also just look over the entire national park. It's got some really great views. And again, because it's so green, it's quite a different scenery than you see in the south of the country.
Excellent. Anything else we want to do in that northern portion of the road?
The final place that I would recommend is a place called Futaleufú, which I have found out exactly what it means, because last time we
did not know.
It's in my guidebook. I read over my guidebook, and apparently I did know this. So it means large river.
Okay.
In Mapudungun, which is the language of the Mapuche, who is the indigenous people that initially inhabited quite a lot of the south of Chile.
Okay.
And I think large river is a bit of an understatement, because this thing has got 47 rapids, which basically, so this is a Rio Futaleufu, after which the town's named, and it's known as a world-class rafting destination.
Excellent. And you are highly recommending rafting down there, as I recall.
Yeah. So there's a lot of people from all around the world, lots of American outfits, but also lots of Europeans. It's a very interesting town because, yeah, it's just so just full of lots of expats who've moved down for the rafting. They take security very seriously. Mm-hmm. And even if you've never rafted before, you can do a sort of short stretch of the river. You can also do kayaking there. There's quite a few hiking trails. And it's just, it's a very sort of quirky little town in this valley. Again, it's just a great place. A lot of people end up spending a bit more time there than they plan to, but it's definitely worth it.
Excellent. And then the one thing I think that we didn't clarify is if you do get a car out of Portimont, you need to return that car probably to Portimont.
Yeah, that is one of the logistical difficulties with the Carretera Austral, is because A, car rental can be quite expensive, mm-hmm. particularly in Balmaceda. But also, yeah, you need to return the car to the same place, because otherwise you're facing one-way fees that can cost as much as the car rental did. Mm-hmm. So you really don't want to have to be kind of worrying about that. And the good thing is, from Shaiten, you can either drive back overland, you can take an overnight ferry, you can take a ferry across to Chiloé Island, which is nearby. You've got lots of different options for mixing it up a bit as to how you get home.
Excellent. As we get into some of our wrap-up questions, the most challenging one, I think, is you are standing in the prettiest spot on the Carretera Austral. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I think for this one, it has to be the Kelulat Hanging Glacier, because there's just nothing like it. It's egg blue, and it's just so unexpected, because you hike up through the forest and then suddenly there's this glacier in front of you and you have no idea where it came from. So yeah, it would definitely be there.
I'm not sure when you described it as a hunk of cheese that people would have guessed that was your your prettiest spot in this. So I'm glad we got back to that question. And then one thing that makes you laugh and say only on the Carretera Austral.
So a lot of the way that actually local people get around, but also a lot of backpackers, is hitchhiking. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a very safe place to do it, because it's quite, even in Chile in general, it's part of the culture that you go hitchhiking. I've personally done it a few times. I really enjoyed it, because you just have these really bizarre conversations, very local conversations with the people, many of whom work in farming as well. So it's kind of a really interesting insight into the region and its people, and everybody's so friendly as well that it's just a great way to chat to people.
Okay, you can't say really bizarre conversations and not give us an example.
I think this always just happens with hitchhiking in Chile. I mean, I had one guy telling me that the pumas were eating all of his cows and stuff, and it was just something that, I don't know, you, yeah. I think with the hitchhiking, people just want to, they just want to tell you everything about their lives. So everything comes out and you never really know what to say, but it's brilliant.
Well, in terms of having conversations with locals, you are fluent in Spanish. If someone is not, how easy is it going to be to get around this region?
I think it does pose its challenges if you don't speak any Spanish. Mm-hmm. I would strongly recommend getting some of the basics, getting a little phrase book. Part of the issue is that Chilean Spanish, the pronunciation of it is utterly bizarre. I describe it a bit as the Glaswegian of Spanish.
Okay.
So for people who've not been to Glasgow, I have a very standard English accent. In Glasgow, you probably think they're speaking another language because you don't understand them. And it's effectively the same with Chilean Spanish. So even if you do know some Spanish, you might struggle.
Mm-hmm.
But even though the level of English isn't enormous in the region, there is enough to get by. And like I said, the people are so friendly that they will do their best to kind of understand what you're saying.
If you had to summarize this region in three words, what three words are you going to use?
Absolute hiking perfection.
Excellent. And your favorite hike of all the ones you've mentioned or have not?
I think my favorite hike is the sort of 4-day traverse of Cerro Castillo.
Okay, where we started. Oh, excellent. And again, Steph is the author of the Moon Chile guidebook. So if you want to read more of her writing, you can certainly read it there. But if we wanted to send people to the best post on Chile that you have at worldlyadventurer.com, where are we going to send them to?
Yeah, so I actually have an article that is dedicated to the Cara del Austral, and it is literally just Cara del Austral. So as long as you can spell it, you can find it.
Well, and I'll be spelling it in the show notes, and I'll have links to that article as well as to all the other places so that you don't have to wonder how to spell Futalefu, for instance, which I can't even say. Excellent. Steph, thanks so much for coming back on Amateur Traveler, both back again this week as well as back again from 5 years ago, to share with us your love for Chile.
Thank you so much for having me.
In news of the community, first I want to thank the patrons who are sponsoring the show through Patreon, especially our newest patron, Sammy Ergen. Thanks so much for sponsoring Amateur Traveler. And Sammy said, my pleasure listening to your episodes during my runs, especially during these times of limited travel, make my mornings. Keep up the great content. And I'm certainly going to with your help. I heard from Aurora on the show that we did recently on Iowa that said, this is one of the best shows I have listened to on any podcast for why one should visit their state. Sarah's enthusiasm is contagious. So much so, I'm planning a trip to Iowa the summer of 2021. Thank you both for providing so much wonderful information. And thanks, Aurora. And it always warms my heart when people plan trips because of things they heard on Amateur Traveler. In fact, I love it when you tell me that, because that is something that usually makes it into my media kit so I can tell sponsors or destinations that people actually use this show to plan their travel. I also heard from Marcia, who said, I love the Iowa podcast, but being born and raised in Des Moines, I must say it was like fingernails on the blackboard every time I heard Des Moines. It is pronounced Des Moines. A local t-shirt company even makes fun of it on a t-shirt they make. As for bicycle riders, there's no better way to get to know Iowa than to ride Ragbri, Register's annual great bike race across Iowa. It is a ride from west to east across the state. The route changes every year, and it is a blast. It is the end of July for 1 week. You could ride 50 to 100 miles a day and overnight in small towns, eating in church basements and the like. You absolutely see the best of Iowa and her people. Thanks so much, Marcia. I've been highlighting recently some of the affiliate links we have on the site at amateurtraveler.com/affiliates. I want to point out Scott's Cheap Flights. I've met Scott. He's a nice guy, and he does an airline deals newsletter. And right now, they're focusing on things that are a little further out for hopefully after we get a vaccine and can be doing some more travel. But he always finds deep discount flights. There's a free version and also a paid version. But go check that out at amateurtraveler.com/affiliates. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening.